you're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballou and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
And welcome inside another edition of Playing Through, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. I'm Bob Ballou.
And I am Carl Nicholson. Good Roxy! Morning to you, Bob.
Roxy! You gonna kick me off the show?
That has no effect on me. I don't want to kick you out. That really felt like a rallying cry, like something cool. Like, Roxy has become everything. Well, not everything, but he's become a lot of the things you hoped he'd be. When we started this show more than 2 years ago, has it been 2 years? More than two,
I guess it has. 2 years.
We just railed that Brooks Koepka was boring in the media room. He was boring in one-on-one appearances, and he was very abrasive. He just didn't get his personal persona. Now that the PGA Tour is incentivizing players to have personalities, to have rapport with the fans, Koepka's taken a very odd approach to fan interaction, but I'm kind of in the cult of Brooks Koepka right now. The moment he rolled his eyes and became a meme there at Kiawah Island when Bryson walked past him, whether that was genuine or it was, as they say in the wrestling vernacular, kayfabe, not breaking kayfabe, whatever, it's captured our attention. So I'm in it for whatever it is. I mean, if it turns out to be Andy Kaufman and Jerry Lawler, fine, then we've all been had. But if it's genuinely real, I'm right here for it, front and center.
All right, so I'm gonna give you my quick take on this because as we enter the starter shack this morning, sponsored by nobody. I always love that on TNT. I have to do that every time.
Sponsored.
If you're interested in sponsoring, please contact us. So we're in the starter shack here, getting ready to go out. And the first thing I think we talk about is this because, listen, when this first happened, I think everybody's reaction to it was, hell yeah, Brooks. Like, nobody likes Bryson. Hell yeah, Brooks. Then Bryson, after the tournament ends, we get this well, I guess it came out after the tournament, but we get this Instagram video that night of him working out with, you know, a little subliminal message. And then Brooks the next morning, they announced the match for, and Bryson's playing with Aaron Rodgers, and Brooks tweets out at Aaron Rodgers 12, sorry, brother. And then Brooks, tweets back or puts on Instagram a shot of him with Brooks with him rolling his eyes, and Bryson put himself in Brooks's head and said, rent free, like I'm living rent free in your head. And that was the moment, Carl, and that was literally as all this started, that I said, no, there's something more here. There's we're missing something. What are we missing? Because I know, or at least I've heard from very credible sources, that the two do not like each other. That is very true in all of
that. That much seems genuine, right?
That much is genuine. The two, Brooks and Bryson, do not like each other. And that's fine. I think it's great. When I was saying all this all along, I was like, this is great for golf. They're starting to show their personalities. Like you mentioned, Carl, we talked about this where after Brooks won the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship, and there was just nothing to, there was nothing to him. There was no personality. There's nothing there. And I criticized a little bit of that. I just said, look, it's and I understood it was early on. He was trying to find his way through some of that stuff. But I was like, look, you're going to have to show your personality. And you can't just be this. Not even that he was boring. I mean, there was just nothing to his answers. There was nothing to anything. And he was fine that way. And he probably still is fine that way. But my bigger point is for golf to grow, we need the best players to show off their personalities a little bit. This is Brooks showing off his personality. This is Bryson showing off his personality in a sense. But it wasn't me. I had a buddy of mine. I was texting with my buddies from Bandon. We have this long text chain we go through. And I texted out, you know, this, I just said, there's something more to this that we're not thinking of. There's something extra. There's something, this is fake in some kind of way. And I don't know what it is. I think their disdain for each other is genuine, but there's something fake here. And one of my buddies wrote back, and he was the first person I heard say it. Didn't the PGA Tour just incentivize right. and put out a $40 million bonus for the top 10 social media people? And I was like, that's it. That's what we've been missing.
Mm-hmm.
Is these guys know that. Brooks knows that. And he's going to go on social media with Michelob Ultra and reward people for shouting Brooksy at Bryson and make this into a social media deal because it gives him popularity, and the guys with popularity are going to get more money. And it was just this, it was like that moment of, oh, like, there it is. We figured it out. And I just haven't heard a lot of people talk. I don't know if you've read this anywhere. I haven't heard a lot of people nationally talking about it. I haven't seen much on it, but I think that's it. I think that's the bottom line of they do not like each other, but there is more to it where Brooks can say, let's, because Brooks has never done this on social media. This is never something that's ever happened with him. So that was kind of my moment of zen, I guess, or my moment of there it is. That's what it is.
And there's more validity to that. I mean, Brooks's most recent take on this is that this beef is growing the game, that people outside of golf are talking about these two professional players having a beef with each other. Brooks is saying that, well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of a wink. There's sort of that wink there that, yeah, this is great for the game, whether it's animosity between two guys or if it ever goes anywhere.
Yeah. I love that he said that, by the way. I love that he said, yeah, this is great for the game. I'm like, okay, I guess. Is it great for the game? Is it?
Maybe I would say it's pretty good for the fans. I mean, the fans who, you know, wouldn't recognize the 71st ranked player if he walked past you in Lowe's right now. For the fans who want somebody to root for, whether it's from their alma mater or the city they live in, or just to have a favorite player and don't quite know who that is. Not to say there's not a lot of great personalities on the tour. There certainly are, and there's certainly personalities that the tour is trying to build and make. It's more interesting than the guys just showing up, hitting balls, changing shoes, and going off to the parking lot. So there's something there. I mean, golf has always kind of – it's never been a truly jock's realm in terms of where you had really – you know, you don't have brawls on the golf course. I don't know that we'll ever see fisticuffs on the PGA Tour. I mean, this is closest we've come since Phil wore metal spikes and Augusta, and VJ didn't like it, and they kind of said some veiled passive aggressive
things through the media. I think it's probably as close as we've come since Keegan Bradley and Miguel Angel Jimenez.
That was pretty close.
That was pretty fiery.
That was, but see, what we remember all of those things because they happen so infrequently. And they're pretty cool. I mean, when fights broke out in middle school or at a party in college or in high school or whatever, I would watch. I would never be the one right there egging it on, fight. But I have to admit, I was watching, you know, and we've already used the term kayfabe about pro wrestling. I was into that when I was a kid. I mean, I guess there's still a little kid in me that's like, okay, could golf be a little bit of that? Where a lot of people would like just feel mortified and just kind of shrink into themselves when they saw John Daly do some of the things he's done, or, you know, some of the other guys that don't fit the country club frat boy model of how you envision the PGA Tour. I like it. I always kind of root for a little bit of that, a little bit of personality on tour, a little bit more genuineness, a little bit more authenticity from the people. And I think that's the big struggle, is why is this so weird from Brooks? Because it doesn't seem 100% authentic. Now, I think he 100% authentically dislikes Bryson for a lot of the reasons that maybe some of the fans dislike Bryson. But it's just got that golf nerdiness to this whole beef. I mean, it's on paper, it's pretty good. Two guys that are really muscular, that can bomb the ball 400 yards, don't like each other. They're turning the screws on each other. Sounds pretty cool. But it's still got some golf nerdiness to the whole thing.
It does. And I agree with that. I want to tell a quick story because I think it's kind of funny talking about that stuff. But I agree with you in the sense that that's the part of it that's good for golf, is that people will talk about it, that it gets it in the national attention. I mean, obviously, I don't know that the PGA Tour loves that that's how it's happening. I'm sure the suits are not happy with that. But you're right. I mean, it's, you know, we wear you out on this show talking about the European Tour and the way the guys handle themselves and the personalities that come out on the European Tour, the way Ian Poulter, you know, handles. Again, Ian Poulter's really grown on me, as much as I just did not like him at all, probably because he was an American killer in Ryder Cup events. But he's really kind of flipped the switch for me on him. And just because of his social media, because of the way he has fun with some of the stuff that happens. So I think that part of it's fine. And the thing that'll be interesting, Carl, is if they allow this to happen, which it's very feasible it could happen, will they pair Gary Woodland, Brooks Koepka, and Bryson DeChambeau together for the U.S. Open? Is that something that will happen? And that would just be awesome. It would be so, you know, pair the last three U.S. Open champions together in a group. I don't know that Bryson's people will let that happen. But I think that is something that could be a possibility, and it would be
Can you deny a pairing from the USGA?
It's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure.
I don't think you can opt out of your pairing.
I'm sure behind the scenes they do everything they can to do it. But
right.
Again, now the problem with it, Carl, is if that happens, it will come out that Bryson didn't want to do it. And again, you go back to this whole him kicking people out of a tournament last weekend when they were yelling Brooksy. He's talking about living rent-free in Brooks Koepka's head. That's the definition of living rent-free in someone's head, is when you can't handle something that's being thrown at you. And Brooksy, yeah, everybody yelling Brooksy at Bryson, that's Brooks in Bryson's head. And so,
right. You
know, that's why I think, again, that's why I go back to this social media thing. So much of it is just kind of BS, fake, just to get attention and get the clicks so that they have the chance to win or whatever they want to call it, the awarded
someone
for the top 10 social media users. So, you know, I just think that's the biggest part of all this. Now I do want to go back to the fight real quick, because it just reminded me of a story when I was in seventh grade that I just wanted to tell. I thought this was so good. So we had one of those situations. My buddy Wade was going to fight somebody at 3 o'clock, you know, around the corner from the middle school. And we were going to go over to the park and they were going to fight each other. And so I was a real goody two shoes back then. I was like, I mean, I did nothing wrong really in terms of that kind of stuff. And, they circle up and it's this whole group in a circle. And I'm like 10 yards away behind the circle trying to watch by myself, 'cause I'm like, I don't want to be a part of this or whatever. And they start fighting and they're going at it. And a cop comes around the corner and turns on his lights. And I mean, everybody runs, because watching a fight, you're going to get arrested. I don't know what to like, how do you even? So I start running through the park, because I had a basketball one-on-one lesson at the gym there, like 20 minutes later. And so I'm running through and I get to the other side and my dad's there because I had the lesson, and my new basketball shoes were all mud, because I had run through the mud to get away from the cops who were apparently going to arrest me for watching a fight. And my dad was mad at me and I had to go in the bathroom and scrub my shoes off or whatever. But I always remember being like, why would I run from the cops when I was literally doing nothing wrong except watching a seventh grade fight? What are they going to do? Put me in detention? Like what? I mean, it was the dumbest thing ever, but that you talked about like the fisticuffs and getting into it on the course. Like we do need more of that. We do need people really like coming to blows on the PGA Tour, and no, we don't need that. But I just had that random thought in my head of why would you, as a seventh grader, you stupid goody two shoes, why would you do that?
No, there's this mortal fear of the police and what they might do to you when you're a kid. And you're like, well, did you never put the practical thought into your head that, well, I haven't broken any laws.
And yeah, that's what my dad said.
I can stand on this asphalt. Yeah, why did you run? Yeah.
Doing?
That always happened at the beer bus. I guess they could have gotten us in high school for loitering when we would go to a parking lot or, and I guess so anyone could have been grabbed. So I guess that made more sense to run. But if you're just spectating in a fight, I get it. Yeah, no, this whole thing, it's, again, I'm happy to see how it plays out. I think it'll be, I would love the, what you mentioned, the USGA pairing or any pairing that had these guys in it. I mean, and it's practical. Like you said, it's as simple as the simple justification is last three US Open winners. That's that, you know, that at some point these guys are talented enough that they're going to get paired together in the same place. So they're going to be in the group next to each other. They're going to be, you know, in the stall next to each other on the practice range. At the end of the day, they both got great lives. I don't think this is about to burst into a fist fight at any given point. Again, they're both been beneficiaries of it. They've dominated the news cycle for a couple of weeks now.
I will say this, Carl. I'll be interested to see when they do, if it's a final round on a Sunday at the U.S. Open this year and it's Brooks and Bryson. I will be interesting to see. I think it will be interesting to see the mind games they play with each other. What do they do that's, you know, if Bryson hits one 40 yards past Brooks, is he just going to walk to his ball and stand way in front of him all day and, you know, act like, you know, well, you can't hit it up here. And is Brooks going to walk around a putt for a little longer to make Bryson think about a 3-footer? And, you know, those are the things that I think if they ever have to play together, that'll be really interesting to watch the dynamic of it and see how many times Brooks rolls his eyes and, you know, all these things that happen. I think that's to me is the, that will be the fun part of it is seeing how they react to each other on the golf course. And who knows? I mean, there's a good chance we could get a pairing at some point. If it's not those first two rounds as the last three US Open winners, but in a different setting on the weekend, it's very feasible. We could see that.
Oh, I would love that. I mean, let's cross our fingers for them to be, you know, genuinely paired because they're both playing well and both under pressure and both having to make decisions whether or not they're going to apply more pressure with the kooky behavior that we've witnessed over the past few weeks. You know, and of course, there might be more to it that we haven't seen, or maybe they just, you know, there's guys you just don't get along with. You just don't mesh. So, again, I think you're right. I think that would be the ultimate, not to see them square up in some sort of made-for-TV boxing match or some horrible contrived thing. If they could genuinely both play their way into the same group where it matters on a weekend, I think that's where this really takes an interesting turn. Right now, it's sort of the jury's out whether this is really interesting or if it's just a modified, you know, wrestling song and dance that we're seeing.
So then on that note, Carl, in your mind, who are the biggest rivals on tour, and who are the guys that, like, if they were paired on Sunday together, you would love to see? You know, forever it was Tiger and Phil, and that was what everybody wanted to see on a Sunday, and we very rarely got it. It was very, very rare that Phil and Tiger were the last two standing in a group playing together on Sunday. If you have those two guys, who would you want to see? And it's maybe not even rivals, or maybe not even. Like, I would love to, I think it would be a blast to see Max Homa and Joel Damon in a final group because they're such good friends. They jab at each other on Twitter all the time. They go on vacations together. I think that would be a really fun pairing on a Sunday to watch coming down the stretch. Now, I don't know that they would do much to each other just because it's, you know, a serious tournament. And they're trying to get through some of that stuff. But I would love to see that. I would love to see Patrick Reed and a lot of people.
There's a line that could form right there by the first tee
and honestly, Carl, like, you know, when Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth played in the match play a few years ago, they played in the bracket round, and I thought, man, this is going to be like really good because of the kind of the fallout, and, you know, the Ryder Cup hadn't happened where they didn't play together, but it was one of those situations where you were like, they had already moved on from that kind of stuff. Patrick had made a comment about Jordan at the Valspar the week before, maybe it was the reverse where somebody took a drop and maybe somebody made a comment about it. I think it was Jordan took the drop and Patrick made a comment like, well, if that was me, obviously it would have been a different situation. But regardless, that didn't really play out into anything. And I don't think Jordan would ever let it play out into anything. So that's why I'm kind of like, if Patrick Reed's going to be paired with somebody, who would it be that would love to call him on something? An Ian Poulter or a, you know, who's a fiery player that would kind of get after him. And that's what I think that's what I would love to see on a Sunday, are guys that maybe don't like each other like Bryson and Brooks don't, but that would have that. If something happens, like somebody would call Patrick Reed on something, they would watch him carefully all day and make sure he didn't do it, you know, take an unfair drop or take a penalty without a referee coming over and looking at it or whatever it is.
That guy might be Brooks Koepka. I mean, yeah. Brooks, all things being equal, for whatever his story arc has been with his personality, he's been not shy lately about calling people out. He might be that guy. Strictly from a talent point of view, I mean, who's the Nicholas Watson, Nicholas Palmer, Tiger Phil of this generation? I think that's what we're hoping for. I mean, I think that there's some anticipation. Could it be? What's the window for Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson? In my personal opinion, the guys that have every tool to the 10th degree. I mean, whatever it is when you play Madden football and you max everything out to 100, I think those on their best days, I think those two guys have it in spades more than any more two guys on the tour. But it's so close. I mean, it's razor thin as far as the talent right now. I mean, those guys don't hate each other, but if that's just me, if I could see two guys at their peak performance in a major where it mattered play the last, 18 or 36 holes side by side, I'd love it. But then the thing about the nature of the tour today, 3 weeks later, it's two other guys. You know, it's Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, or it's Xander Schauffele and Bryson DeChambeau, or it's Colin Morikawa and Victor Hovland, or
and that's, know, but that's the issue, right? I mean, if it's Justin, right. If it's Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, they're not going to do anything on a Sunday to, go after one another, or maybe they fire birdies at each other, but like, I'm not going to get Rory, which I wish we would. I wish we'd get Rory and Patrick Reed throwing haymakers at each other and making birdies and telling the crowd to shush and all that. I know that's only Ryder Cup, but how much fun would that be at the 3M Open or at the Byron Nelson or, these guys like kind of have that mentality. I understand they need to win a tournament to keep their card. They need to win a lot of money and set themselves up for life. I get all of that. I understand that's the point. But I just think some of these guys probably have the personality that they could do that kind of stuff and have some fun with it.
No doubt about it.
So,
yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing, you've seen a guy return to form that used to be just the total red tail guy. It was Billy Horschel, used to be hilarious on the golf course. Now he's just more focused on being a really, really, really good player on the golf course. But I'd love to see him get to the top and get some of that fire and just take on all comers. I mean, there's
he'll still make comments to the fans if somebody does something, or
sure. Yeah. But,
yeah, I agree. I just think we need more of it. I think it'd be good for the game. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get you set for the US Open next week. Bunch of Longhorns in the field, some really unique Longhorns in the field, some really good amateur players that are going to be in the field. And we'll talk a little Torrey Pines and who we like, and we'll get that going next. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Another good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas. Welcome back inside Playing Through, presented by PGA Tour Superstore. He is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Ballew. A lot of fun. Carl and I are not rivals, but last segment we talked a lot about the rivalries on the golf course and who has the opportunity to really kind of stand out on the PGA Tour. If you wanted to see somebody play on a Sunday, the final pairing, who would you really want that would be kind of fiery, have some personality, instead of just two guys like Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth going through the round and not really saying much, nothing really happens. You hear Spieth talk to Greller. You hear JT kind of laugh about some shots he'll hit, or he'll hit a shot and say, talk dirty to me, or spin his club. I mean, he's got all – they've got good stuff like that, but there's no real rivalry to speak of on that front. And so that was a good talk. I really enjoy trying to figure out who the next group of guys are on that front. Carl, as we look ahead, we will have a big time Sunday next weekend as the 2021 US Open returns to Torrey Pines. And I think the first thing everybody that pops into your head when you think of Torrey Pines is Tiger and Rocco in 2008. I mean, it's the quintessential, like Tiger Bob May at the PGA Championship as well. Tiger Woods, the greatest golfer to ever play the game. I know there are people who still think it's Jack, and that's okay. We can make that argument. But Tiger Woods, the greatest golfer to ever play the game, playing middle of the pack 2008 Rocco Mediate, playing 2003, who is Bob May? I mean, that's what, again, for the millionth time, that's what we love about this game is those guys can go head to head and toe to toe. And Rocco had every chance to win that event. And if Tiger doesn't make a ridiculous, hit a ridiculous wedge out of the rough on 18 and make a ridiculous putt, they don't even go to the playoff. And Tiger trailed in the playoff. I mean, there was so much to everything that happened there. So I'm real excited about this. I love going back to Torrey Pines for an event like this. It's like when they play the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. It's not the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Guys right. probably won't shoot 37 under. And, you know, it's a lot of fun to see them heading back to Torrey and get that chance to play the U.S. Open there again 13 years later.
I totally agree. You know, that's what you hope is that it matches the drama. I don't know. That was an all-time great U.S. Open, though, because, as you mentioned, Rocco had so many chances. There were a number of times where it looked like it was Rocco all the way. I mean, like you said, you mentioned, I mean, that crazy up and down Tiger got to extend, you know, to get to the playoff is one of the all-time great putts in the history of the game. I mean, championship history. But the most unlikely – and it. Having spoken to Rocco and gotten to know him a little bit and you know, spent some time with people who know him really well, that's the genuine guy. I mean, he really is like singing Moody Blues songs to under his breath and just kind of whistling through the willows kind of a guy. It is just that light. And the contrast of the intensity of Tiger Woods at the U.S. Open was just great. I mean, it was fabled storytelling because that's just Rocco. You cannot rattle Rocco Mediate and you can't rattle Tiger Woods, but in totally different contexts. I mean, they're complete contrasts in personalities and approach in game. It's a bummer Rocco didn't win, but I mean, when you look at the whole landscape of Tiger's story, it's, you know, you're kind of glad he did put another one in the notch, you know, another notch on.
I would have loved to have seen Rocco one. I would have loved.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
everybody was rooting for Tiger. I know, but
it's one of those great ones where it's tough. Sometimes you get that in hockey or the NBA season. It's a bummer. One of these teams is going to beat the other. You know, sometimes it's so evenly matched. Definitely. It's a very good in terms of scoring and in terms of protecting par. Torrey Pines is an excellent venue. You can get the cameras up and really show off some of the beautiful scenery around there. I will warn you, golf Twitter is going to be brutal to the golf course. Torrey Pines is the redheaded stepchild of golf course architecture geeks and the woke generation of people who need every course to be McKenzie or Ross or Tillinghast or a modern architect that emulates that. There's going to be a lot of bashing of the golf course I won't accuse the no laying up guys or anybody that falls into that, but don't be shocked that that's a huge part of the narrative online. But I myself will be able to just enjoy the golf tournament. It's an exceptional field. The venue is perfectly fine. It's going to test the great players. Doesn't bother me in the least that the last hole is a gettable par five because what did we just talk about a couple minutes ago? The amazing opportunity for Tiger to claw his way back into the golf tournament, have a birdie opportunity. Now, if that's a 525-yard par four where you're just hoping to creep a ball up to the edge of the green and, you know, make a 60-footer, the drama's not there. So the fact that that hole is pivotal I think is great. The fact that it reminds you a little bit of the utterly ridiculous and improbable 18th hole in the movie Tin Cup, which was a forced carry over water from a course that had, you know, railroad ties and every other garish architectural feature you could name from the late 80s, early 90s of design. I think Torrey Pines is going to be fun just because everything we talked about this whole show is that there are a number of incredibly talented players playing well right now. To handicap the field or get you exciting. I don't know if you've even thought about who your picks are
going into this,
but it's, I think it's again, we're in this wonderful age where anybody from age 20 to age 50 could win a major.
I want to see, first of all, if you can name a little trivia here in the middle of the show. Can you name the six Texas Longhorns that will play in the field at this week's U.S. Open, or next week's U.S. Open, I should say?
To get to six. Okay, let me see.
This is what's fun about it. This is why I love this week at the U.S. Open, because the last week we had the sectional qualifying. And to see the names at some of the courses of guys who qualified is just awesome. Like, it's just, you just see names you don't see anymore on tour. You see names that you don't even remember are still like a realistic player, but let's see who you got.
Well, I'm going to go with the easy one. So I know Jordan and Scotty are in the field. So that's, I'm one third of the way there.
Yes.
Is Cole Hammer in the field?
Cole Hammer is in the field, and this is the last four guys that are part of this qualified. I believe all four of them qualified at the same sectional events. So these are all four qualifiers. But Cole Hammer is in the U.S. Open, which is just a phenomenal. Again, he was, you know, the number one ranked world amateur at one point, really struggled at the national championships in Scottsdale. Which, again, I go back to, Carl, literally just one of the most bizarre, you know, Pearson gets sick. He can't even play. It was just a mess. And to turn around and immediately qualify for the U.S. Open through sectional play is pretty unbelievable. But that's the golf mentality, right? I mean, that's what you have to do to make that happen.
Sure. You got to have a really short memory. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Yeah. So what is did Doug Gim make it? I saw that there was an effort. Is Pearson in the field?
Pearson Cootie is in the field as well. And that's what's so super interesting about this, is to have both of those guys go through what they went through at the national championships and then turn around and qualify through sections. And again, Pearson was sick and couldn't play. So there's a little bit of a difference there. But, you've got two guys that were both number one world-ranked amateurs from the University of Texas, and both of them will be playing in the U.S. Open through qualifying. And it's just what an awesome moment for those kids to have that opportunity. Young men is probably a better way to put that, right? Not kids anymore.
Well, it's a great experience. I mean, regardless of what happened in Scottsdale, they've got to be riding a high, you know, playing with the best players in the world. I don't think there's anything like it. I mean, if you point back to Jordan Spieth at Olympic Club, he said that's the thing that solidified his decision to turn pro. So it really, anything could happen. I mean, it could just be another week where you go through the paces and your game's not quite there. But I mean, if you have a week like Jordan Spieth did, you know, the gears start turning, especially for guys like Pearson Cootie and Cole Hammer, who are kind of right on that really pivotal life decision you get the sense that they're either going to be out here with these guys or they're going to make their best run at it soon. It's really just a matter of when and how. So I think it's a very fascinating, you know, more than ever, just because the talent pool is so deep. It happens to guys so much younger. I mean, if you look at the generation of Wolf, Hovland, Scheffler, Sung J.M., that thing, there is no grueling 5 years on the Corn Ferry Tour anymore for a lot of these guys. I mean, they've been doing it their whole lives. They've been playing at the highest level for all these times. So I think you're spot on. I think it's going to be a fascinating week for them. And if it's not the week that changes their lives, I think that's okay. I mean, like you said, just making the field surpasses a lot of great names out there. I mean, if you look at the guys that go to these qualifiers, and that Monday is always a great week to watch. I mean, that's when you love the internet, is when you can keep track of, you know, a dozen or however many it is, you know, eight or nine different qualifiers where you're like, God, good grief, that guy almost won a U.S. Open. Or, you know, I remember watching that guy at the Masters. I can't believe there he is, you know, 20 years later, still trying to grind it out and get in the field. It tells you how meaningful it is, how important it is to play in these majors. And
it's
a big deal on every level. So, yeah. Back to, though, who is Dylan Fratelli in the field?
Dylan Fratelli is in the field. I want to make one quick point on that because this weekend, Cole Hammer played in the Palmetto Championship on the PGA Tour. He had a he got into that tournament, did not play well again. So now you go, is it too much golf? Is it
right?
I mean, how, like, where's the balance of, you know, he played. I mean, they've played so much golf in the last month, even.
Right.
And to come off sectionals, qualify, then go to play a PGA Tour event. You don't play well there. Now you can go play the U.S. Open and have kind of – I wonder if he just has his mind free when he gets there, because it's like, man, I've been all over the place lately. So that was – that'll be interesting to see. Dylan Fratelli is in the field. He qualified as well. And, you know, he's a guy that's still in the top 100 in the world. He's ranked 89th in the world, and he is still – you know, obviously plugging away and playing golf at a high level, but he had to qualify through sectionals. And then do you know the last one?
I don't know the last one.
Johnny Vegas is in the field.
Hey,
and right, listen,
he's got some great history at Torrey Pines. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah,
yeah, and he's this will be his fourth U.S. Open, and he's yet to make a cut. He played from 2017, 2018, 2019, but again, a guy that has shown he can win at a high level. He has won, I believe he's won three PGA Tour events. Yeah, three PGA Tour events. He's finished in the top 40 at the U.S. Open, PGA Championship, and Masters. I mean, he's done these things that, that, you know, you should give you some confidence when you head into an event like this. And so his name's at the top of the leaderboard a lot of times. Going into the weekend, or he's still playing some good golf. So yeah, six Texas Longhorns in the field is a really good number, and it's just, again, a tribute to the work that John Fields does and what he's doing over there. But let's move on to our picks, Carl. We've got a few minutes left in our segment here. Just initial, without even really kind of getting into the details of tee to green and strokes gained and all that kind of stuff. Who do you like? If you had to pick one person right now, who would you pick?
Well, not to tempt your gag reflex, but I'll take the most obvious pick. Xander Schauffele from the area. I pick him in every major, but, I mean, how do you not? I mean, the one major I didn't pick him was the Masters most recently, and he was in the top three there. So I'm going to start there.
Okay.
And say, hey, why the heck not? He's always in the majors. He's always right there at the top of the leaderboard. No reason he wouldn't be there this time.
I'm just going to go ahead and give you the winner so that we don't even have to.
Let's just cut to the chase. I like that.
I don't want to get into the details of any of this. I don't want to go into anything that's happened or who you think it is or isn't going to be. I'm going to. Do you have any guesses of who? I'm just like, it's a no doubter.
You could say I think you feel really strongly about John Rahm.
It's John Rahm.
That's your pick. I like that.
No, Carl, I feel like you've gotten to the point you can read my mind. This is a little scary.
Well, it's a great pick. I mean, I don't know if you were analytical in that pick or it's just a gut pick, but he is a strokes gained beast. I mean, on every level. I mean, he gained strokes driving. He gained strokes with his irons. He putts well. I mean, there's really no weakness. And we talked about what could be a great rivalry. I mean, regardless of, you know, temperament or personality, I think John Rahm is a superstar on this tour because of his talent. He's another one. He's another one that's a great pick every week. And he sort of surpassed that level of guys that you look at with Tony Finau and some of those guys that, you know, Rahm has shown us that he's capable to run away from the field when he needs to, or, you know, get into some really, you know, head-to-head battles with guys and come out on top from time to time. So yeah, there's no reason a guy with his talent, his capability, his commitment to the game can't win a major. So I love that pick.
I just think, having gone through what he just went through at the Memorial, playing as well as he was playing and on a, you know, a surefire way to go.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about that on this show. Yeah, and talk about running away from the field. I mean, that was a foregone conclusion.
It was over.
Yeah.
And to have it ripped away like that, I understand he's not coming out of isolation until the day before the tournament or 2 days. Wow. I don't think any of that matters. I think he is, he'll be working out in his home or wherever he is in his isolation. He'll be hitting golf balls and preparing for Torrey. I just think with the way that went down, with the fact that he hasn't won a major yet, with all these things, I just think it all lines up. And I think I don't know that will be a real popular pick. Quite honestly, I think people will want to pick Brooks or Bryson or somebody, you know, an American that has a real strong appetite for Torrey Pines, I just think it's going to be John Rahm. And we'll stick by that pick for now. And I won't change my mind on it because I'm real secure in that pick. But it will be fun to start doing the research and going through who we think has the best opportunity to win at US Open.
No question about it. That would be a phenomenal bookend to what happened at the Memorial, which is sort of what hung over our heads all the way back to March 2020. What if something like this happened? And we thought we were out of the woods on potentially COVID-19 affecting the outcome of a PGA Tour event. I mean, I think this might be one of the most dramatic swings, and a lot of people knocked the way that the tour officials, you know, rushed right to him, you know, right off the fringe of the 18th green after he was the runaway 54-hole leader. Yeah, so it just shows you anything. And then there were times overnight where people were rooting for a rain canceled event where he could still win the golf tournament. You know, yeah. So I don't know if I've ever seen the fans root for a rainout of the final round of a tournament, but I was kind of there with them. I thought, well, okay, that would be, you know, that would be some sort of cosmic justice if that could happen.
Yeah.
It just very, very, very bizarre. But like you said, the one thing that gets lost in all of that is how well he was playing. I mean, he was running away from the building a lead rather than maintaining a lead. I mean, it's just really, yeah.
No doubt. All right. Well, we've made our picks for the US Open. And then when we get on the show next week, we'll have a good opportunity to say, here's where we kind of stood going into the weekend and who we like, and you know, if we think we need to change our picks, maybe we will. I mean, if John Rahm and Xander Schauffele don't make the cut, we won't have a choice. So we'll have to see what happens next weekend. All right. When we come back, we're going to dive into what a wonderful day it was yesterday out at Wolf Dancer for Bucky and everything that he got done, and the Mullet Open, again, just a huge success. We'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballou and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Final segment here, Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. He is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Ballou. We appreciate you joining us this morning. I had a great conversation about Brooks and Bryson and everything that's going on with them and how much of it's real and how much of it is staged and how much of it is, you know, we're trying to figure it all out on that front. And then we made our U.S. Open picks last segment as well, talked about the six Texas Longhorns in the field. And as we finish up here, I mean, first and foremost, before we get into our games, Carl, because I think the viewers have been on pins and needles waiting to hear how our games have shaped up over the last few months and what we're doing with our games.
I believe it.
Just a huge congratulations to Bucky Godbolt for another successful Mullet Open. What an unbelievable job he does. I mean, that thing's sold out like 3 years in advance now. You can't get in the field anymore. It's just a tribute to what he does, what it means to him, and excited to hear how much money he raised and everything that he did to make it possible. So congratulations to Bucky. And I feel like we're all honored to know him for everything that he does. He's such a good guy and such a cheater at golf, which I love more than anything. And no, I'm kidding. But I just it's just a tribute to him and everything that all the work that he puts in to make that happen.
No, just like you with Under Blue Skies and the work you do for ALS, what Bucky does and the heart he has for the Burke Center for Youth and the Refuge Ranch and people whose lives have been, you know, shattered or traumatically affected in some way, that's what he chose to dig in. And the people have bought in. I mean, it's very difficult to even get into this tournament. It's become quite like your tournament that you better get your foursome booked early, or you're just not going to get in. But boy, the people really around this another great event with tons of, you know, raffle prizes, don't auction items. Yeah. The whole bit. And it all goes for a wonderful cause. And Bucky puts months and months of his life into making sure that this is special. So the legacy he's built for 20 years is really cool to see. And the fact that he's still extremely committed to helping the cause is a great thing.
And the Instagram page had up some pictures yesterday morning. And I mean, the prizes are like, there's no end to the table. I mean, the number of prizes that are there and everything that you can win and everything you get. Right. It's just, they just do such a great job with it. And it's awesome to see it. Carl, before we go real quick, how's your game?
I am struggling again with the driver, but I think I've got it back. So if I play on a wide open golf course, I'm pretty good, but I played a top 100 course that's hosted a US Open last week and I suffered. It had high rough that you just had to chop back out from. And I paid the price. So I've got to get the driver straighter. But everything else is kind of clicking. I feel pretty good about the rest. But I've got to find the fairway.
I love it. I've played golf twice in the last 2.5 months since my – or 2 months since my return from Bandon. I've just played none. And I'm going to get a feel for how my game is here in the next couple weeks. I'm going to play again. I've got a tournament. I may have a tournament. I've got to figure out if it's going to depend on Texas baseball, but maybe playing in a charity tournament Monday morning, played yesterday. It's just not great right now. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. I get no time to practice. I'm painting the house. We're doing stuff to the house every day. We got 2 kids, young kids. Let's be honest. I mean, it's just not happening right now. And that's okay.
Yeah. Golf's that way. You got to put the time in. Yeah.
I've got a member guest coming up in September and I'll start kind of dialing it in, you know, in July and August as we get the house done and as we get closer to the important things like member guests, you got to really be dialed in.
You're always good at peaking at the right time though, for those member guests. those are fun stories. Yeah.
We'll see. Well, Carl, always enjoy it, my friend. And really looking forward to a fun week getting set for the 2021 US Open at Torrey Pines. It's going to be a great week of stats and picks and all that kind of stuff. And by Thursday morning at noon, you'll be mad you picked everybody you picked. And then we'll start all over and do it again and run it back next weekend and see who we like for the weekend at the US Open.
That's the way it goes, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't believe it's already US Open week and Father's Day creeping up. So it's just going to be a real blast. It's always one of the great, great weeks of the year. So I'm looking forward to it a whole lot.
No doubt. All right, Carl, always enjoy it. We'll do it again next week, my friend.
Can't wait. Look forward to it.
All right, he is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballew. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everyone.